Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. And joining me in studio here is our producer, Jonathan Field. Good morning, Jonathan.
Hi, good morning.
And coming to us from the Gulf Coast is the chairman of our advisory board and co-host, Ron Bachman. Ron, good morning.
Good morning to everybody up there.
How are you doing this morning, Ron?
I'm doing terrific. It's a nice sunny day out here. Dolphins are jumping in the Gulf of Mexico, and they just can't wait for Healthcare Consumerism Radio to start. Got an exciting program.
There we go. And I think all of us on this team, you include all of us, have slowly recuperated from our event last week that we'll talk about more on this show, you know, during this event. So, and we're looking forward and looking ahead to our next events. But, you know, we've got a great guest coming on the program in a little bit. And that's Tanya Madsen, the Director of Product Management with Health Fitness. And I think it's a very appropriate discussion with Tanya, you know, really following on the discussions we had at Forum and Expo last week. She's going to really talk to us about the evolution from wellness to well-being, very appropriate timing of that subject and kind of continuing from the discussions that we had last week. But before we get started in our program today, you know, we want to take a minute and thank our radio sponsor, Aflac, you know, the leader in really voluntary benefits. We appreciate their support. Aflac's really current mission and message to the market is how voluntary benefits are becoming an essential benefit, a core benefit, and very appropriate. They had an excellent workshop last week at Forum and Expo. They'll be doing some other things content-wise with us over the next couple of weeks. So look for their information. Look for continuing dialogue here, including some upcoming guests really talking about this important subject, and that's voluntary becoming an essential benefit. So, again, thank you to Aflac. And if you want to check out Aflac, of course, you go to Aflac.com. So guys, listen, we're going to recap Forum and Expo a little later, but, no rest for the weary. We're on to our next two events, Private Exchange Forum coming up September 8th in Baltimore, and IEC Forum West, November 9 through 10. We're really excited about both of these events, and, Private Exchange Forum, a lot of interesting debates and discussion out in the marketplace on, are they moving? Are they going to move? You know, what's going to happen? I think our purpose with Private Exchange Forum is to provide that place to have those discussions and to really understand what a benefit marketplace is today and where it can either be a good tool for you, the broker, to use with your clients. It can be part of an overall, strategy, a tool within that strategy for, benefit leaders. So that'll be, and again, September 8th through 9th. But, Ron, you led an interesting exchange panel, and, what's your perspective on Private Exchange Forum coming up?
Well, I think we can carry the energy over from the exchange discussions we had recently here in Atlanta. If we can carry that over to Baltimore, and I'm sure we will, it'll be an exciting forum for people to attend. There's still a lot of curiosity and interest. Benefit managers are very risk averse because they affect thousands of lives in many cases, hundreds for the small group marketplace, and include spouses and children. You have to be very careful about decisions, and moving to exchange is a big transition for many people. Some have already seen the wisdom of doing it and have moved and have benefited their employees, and others are still looking at the marketplace. I think the exciting part of the upcoming Baltimore forum around exchanges is the idea of how consumerism and exchanges are melding together. You've been talking about this for a long time, but I think as we take a look at choices and options and administrative savings and removing some of the burden from the benefit managers, all that kind of fits together. But one of the other aspects is I think if you look at and find the right exchange, the exchange can be large enough if you're especially a mid-sized employer. The exchange can be large enough to bring in some partnerships so that you can get best of practice and not just get everything from one carrier or one source offering up health management, disease management. You can get best of practices because you're working with the volume of that consultant or that IT a solution provider that's building out an exchange. So there's lots of things going on that will help people get more engaged and bring that consumerism aspect of choices and give me what I want, not what some benefit manager wants, and give me the best practices, not just what happens to be convenient as a one-stop shop. So there's so many different aspects they're developing. It's great.
Yeah, I think you're right too. And again, I'm going to be a little redundant that we're not leading people one direction. We're providing the forum for these discussions to take place and the understanding and even a nice debate on what they are or aren't. And I think that the interesting part around consumerism and choice is that it's not really as much about the major medical plan decisions. It's about all the other choices that mold with that major medical plan. It's about the voluntary benefits, mm-hmm. both supplemental and voluntary. It's about healthcare access, about access, whether it's accessing a primary care network, whether it's accessing transparency tools, whether it's accessing, your telehealth, your wellness solutions. It's not just about benefit delivery and benefit accessibility. It's about creating mm-hmm. that health and benefit portal that people can come back to and access, the tools, the services, the help they need, the education they need, the decision support they need to really be that better consumer of health and healthcare that we talk about so much.
And I think that's where the market's beginning to evolve that I saw at the conference in Atlanta here that we just had. That exchanges are not just focusing on, I've got a lower cost for your administrative. I can take some of that burden off you, or I've got this decision support, health education, health literacy, whatever term you want to use. But they're bringing in all the different aspects I just mentioned, whether it's, and we're going to be talking about a little bit with Tanya, whether it's bringing in wellness, well-being, it's bringing in financial, it's bringing in alternatives. And the exhibitors in Atlanta, I think, demonstrated that. And I think the interaction between some of the exchange players and the exhibitors to see what's out there that they might bring into the exchange was very interesting to watch. I mean, we had people from the SPCA, the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, selling pet insurance. If an exchange doesn't have something like pet insurance, let alone financial help and support or different stress management programs, they're going to be missing out on an opportunity to try to collect their own customers to their stable. So it's really interesting to see the dynamic between different players. So whether you're a benefit manager or you're a solution provider, I think these forums have so much energy going on and so much interaction and networking that people are beginning to see some new options and partnerships and strategic relationships that are really important. So I think IHC is creating that forum, again, not to push in one direction or another, but to bring people together. And those people are smart enough. They're entrepreneurs that will find their own way as to what's best for them and create a much more dynamic marketplace. So it's pretty exciting to watch, and I expect we'll see the same thing in Baltimore.
Yeah, and as a benefit marketplace and exchange, I think all this terminology has continued to evolve, becomes kind of put in the planning cycle of these benefit directors and the advisors and consultants working with them. I think it's naturally and understood that it's going to move into a 1 to 5 year benefit plan. So the timing of Baltimore on September 8th and 9th is right before open enrollment. Isn't about this fall's open enrollment period. Sure, there may be some brokers there or some employers there that are looking to make some final decisions and do something still this year for 2017 plan year, but it's really about a look ahead and what are your plans going to be 2018, 2019. So it's getting that look inside and a better understanding of who you need to be reaching out to. If you're a benefit director or advisor, who do you need to be reaching out to make a part of, this proper plan and movement for your workforce. So, great facility. If you're listening here, you want to be we're at the Renaissance Hotel right in the Harbor Place in Baltimore. It's a great facility, easy access for people to get to, throughout the country and particularly throughout the Eastern Seaboard. So, if you're a listener out there, whether you're an attendee or a sponsor or a speaker, reach out to us. We'd love to have you join us in Baltimore September 8th through 9th. And then we'll be rolling out, IHC Forum West November 9th through 10th in Las Vegas. And, you know, we're excited about that because the timing comes right after the election. While no decisions will be made, there sure will be a lot of discussion about it and a lot of interesting perspectives, I think, drawn. But again, IHC Forum West, you know, this footprint for West Conference is going to be all around innovation and case studies. I mean, really about, you know, where innovation is taking place and around technology, around program development, and around bringing real case studies to play of people putting, you know, these tools and programs in place. And again, November 9th through 10th is time to really give people a look into, you know, what just happened during this fall enrollment period and where do you move ahead, you know, into your plans for 2018 plan year. It's kind of scary to be saying those words, 2018 plan year already, but it's right on top of everyone's
mind.
That's
where we are.
Yeah, that's exactly
that's where we are.
So, and I think, Jonathan, we have $99 Super Saver rates, right? Don't we? So $99 Super Saver rates for both these events right now. If you go to www.theihccforum.com, you can check out all the agendas and sign up for $99. At this time, we'd like to welcome our first guest onto the program. I'd like to bring on the program Tanya Madsen, Senior Director of Product Management with Health Fitness. Tanya, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good. Great to have you on the program. Are you out in California?
I sure am.
Great to have you coming to us bright and early out there. So give our audience a little background on Health Fitness, please, if you would.
Okay, sure. Health Fitness is one of the leading providers of comprehensive health management and fitness programs, and we've been in the industry for over 40 years, going back to some of the early days of Johnson & Johnson's work, which is where I also started as a health educator. And we just provide on-site staff, screenings, biometrics, health assessments, coaching, and occupational health even.
Yeah. Well, great to have you on the program. I think your the topic for this morning's discussion is very timely. You know, we're just coming off of our major annual IHC Forum Expo last week and wellness and well-being was a big discussion. And, you know, when it comes to discussion around the evolution from wellness to well-being, you know, kick this off by helping us define well-being, if you would.
Sure. Well, what's tricky about well-being is that there is truly no single definition, and that can make it tough because the word well-being is used in many different contexts. But, you know, there's a couple of people who have defined it, and for one of the places we always look is the Webster Dictionary, and they define it as the state of being happy, healthy, or prosperous, which is a really nice starting place to define it in a broader sense. And then also, even the CDC simplifies it to say it can be described as judging life positively and feeling good. So we define it as a very broad way of looking at your life, and it is somewhat subjective because it includes, you know, not only your physical health and how you might feel physically, but then it needs to incorporate many other dimensions of life and health, such as your social well-being, financial, as we were talking about, spiritual, career, community, intellectual, and more.
Yeah. Ron, do you have a question for Tanya?
Yeah, Tanya, flesh that out a little bit more for us, because I think the this whole evolution of wellness to well-being is really taking hold in the marketplace, and you mentioned several of them. I always think of the four aspects of the human existence of mental, physical, social, and spiritual. And I'm glad you mentioned spiritual because that tends to get overlooked. Not religious because that gets into all sorts
right.
of sensitive areas, I guess, but spiritual. and, you know, we're seeing even in that area people dealing with stress and depression in each of these areas, spiritual with yoga and meditation and other aspects, and social with financial stresses, family relationships. What are all the package of services? Can you give us a little bit more in-depth for our audience and our listeners out there of the various ways that you're moving from wellness, which is sort of the clinical health aspects, to this well-being concept, which is much broader.
Okay, sure. I'd be happy to. And, you know, there are different models of well-being, but the well-being model that we use at Health Fitness really has five dimensions that incorporates all those different things that you mentioned, Ron. And I'll start with the physical dimension only because we just can't ignore it. It really is the foundation
right.
for where we get our energy and have the physical health to meet both the demands and the joys of living. Hopefully we, you know, even get to enjoy good stuff too. But then when you go beyond the physical, which is very important, then one of the other dimensions that are so important is our social well-being. And that's really about connections and social support. And I think all of us know from our own life, too, but human beings need connections with other people. And when we don't have them, studies have even found that lack of social connectedness, like loneliness and isolation, can reduce your IQ and be a predictor of early death and dementia. So that's the, you know, downside of not having social well-being. But on the good side, when you have it, when you thrive and you have a lot of social support and connections, it can be very powerful. Some studies have shown that if you're one of those people that can raise your hand and say, I have a best friend at work, we're 7 times more likely to be engaged, we're better with our customers, we produce higher quality work, and we just have higher well-being overall. So that would be one of the examples of the dimensions.
Okay.
Do you want me to keep going? Because I also don't want to just keep talking.
No. Well, our listeners are here to hear you, not to hear us necessarily. So, yeah, if you got a little bit more there, and then I'll ask you another question about the financial well-being.
Okay, sure. I'll keep going then with the dimensions. The other thing about the social dimension of well-being that I think is fascinating is not only is it important to have it at your own level, because, you know, some people are very satisfied with their social well-being if they have a couple of close friends and people that they can confide in and go to for support during difficult times, while other people, you know, like to have a broader circle and busier social life. So I want to emphasize that this is where, again, well-being can be subjective and unique for each one of us. And then the other power of social well-being is our social networks. And we're so interconnected with the people that we spend time with the most every day that Christakis has found studies, and I think you've probably heard of these, that if your friends are obese, your risk for obesity is 45% higher. And if your friends' friends are obese, your risk is 20% higher. So this pattern of how our the people that we spend our time with can affect us also is related to not only obesity, but depression and smoking and some other behaviors. So we believe that it's really important to turn those social networks around so that it's positive. So if we could say the friends that we hang out with are in a healthy weight, or the friends that we work with and spend time with are the type who like to go for a walk or eat healthy and do things like that, you're then turning that social power and network into a positive spin.
Are there any sources you would recommend our readers go to, in addition to your website, of course, to sort of get themselves in a better understanding of well-being? I'm thinking, for example, are you familiar with a book called Blue Zone?
Yes, for sure. That's a great one.
Okay. It's a great book to go and read, and it talks about things you were sort of mentioning. It uses terms like, caring circles and sharing circles and wise men and wise women, people help you along the way with the stresses and depressions of life that tend to make you more productive and happier and live longer. And a high percentage of the population was living above age 100. That I guess it's Peter Buettner wrote the book. So there's some sources like that that work well into trying to support this whole idea of well-being.
Yeah, there definitely are. In addition to just studies that different researchers have done that give you more of the science behind it, like Christakis, you can do Google searches for him. He did that study about the social networks in the New England Journal of Medicine. We also just recently had the Art of Health Promotion Journal, the well-being issue came out by Paul Terry at Hero, and that just came out in January, February of 2016, where there was some really nice summaries done there about well-being and where we are today as an industry. So I think that's a great place to look. And another study that I just call out for people who like to look at how well-being can interact with demographic factors and risk of hospitalization or ER visits is a study by William Gandy et al. So if you do searches for Gandy and that kind of thing, I think you'll find some good stuff.
So how are employers, especially like CEOs, they're so critical in getting the HR benefit manager to move in different directions, but whether it's the C-suite folks or maybe the head of HR, how are they becoming more receptive to these ideas? What's your take on whether it's geographical or industry-wide? How many people and where they start to pick up on this concept of well-being and the broader individual, not just the time they're at work?
Yeah. Well, I think that the time is ripe. You know, well-being isn't a completely new concept, of course, for people who've been around a long time. There were well-being models early on, but I think they were looked at as a little bit too much fluff. And then even as our industry evolved and we focused on the physical dimension and people started doing research to connect the cost savings and productivity savings over time with those, what happened is now there's enough research there that has proven that, then the factors that affect many of our physical, you know, blood pressure, cholesterol, depression, things like that, those dots are being connected. And really, you know, money talks with CEOs and CFOs who have to make budget decisions. So you have to always help them see that these efforts are going to help move their business forward. And I think some of the other research that the American Psychological Association has done and some of the consulting groups is they're also helping companies see the connection between well-being and engagement in the workforce. So I don't mean engagement like participating in a walking program, but being a loyal employee who's willing to put in the extra time and effort to make your business move forward, to keep you, you know, really being at your best. And that kind of work, I think, has started to catch their attention because they're seeing that it's really an investment in human capital overall.
So at times, it directly correlates to productivity, to your point, and performance, which can be two different terms. And to retention,
yeah.
Right? A big concern with employers is retaining these people.
Exactly right. And you want to have the kind of workforce that is happy to come to work, has best friends at work, they're willing to go above and beyond and bring their best every day. And if you support their overall well-being, not just their physical, but also their emotional well-being, you know, create a healthy environment and culture, which is also part of the model, then that's when you give them all the support for them to be their best, not only in their own life, but, you know, when they're working for you.
Can it also be tied back to, I mean, CFOs are very concerned about risk management, you know, and the cost of managing, you know, the risk around your employee population. Can it be tied back to helping CFOs and CEOs see that correlation?
Yes. Luckily, there's been a lot of studies out there. Gallup is one of them, has done a lot of research. And you can even connect the dots for them in specific areas. Like stress is a very good one that is, you know, one of the reasons why the financial well-being topic is so hot. Because financial well-being is one of the biggest areas of stress, or I should say money issues, there has been so much research done to connect high stress levels with excess costs. And, you know, risks of depression and loss of productivity and absenteeism, that would be a great example, excuse me, where, you know, you can connect the dots quickly to some of these other dimensions that we've talked about for a long time already.
And then I think financial wellness and financial well-being correlates to the evolution of more HSA high deductible plans out there being put in place by many employers. So employees and their families are actually facing more financial risk.
Definitely. I mean, we see it all around us, even, you know, in my personal life. That's happened to us with our plans and colleagues and people that I know, and it's affecting day-to-day decisions and on where you spend your money and how you have to plan and budget for it.
Yeah, we've got a couple minutes here to go, and I can't get you off the phone without asking about something else, you know, We showcased this last week at Forum, and I just, you know, with your experience, I'd love your feedback on where do you see mindfulness evolving in the total well-being discussion?
I think it's one of the most essential skills that we could learn to make improvements in our overall well-being. In fact, we created a recent program called Beyond Weight, and that's taking a non-dieting approach to weight management. So you take the focus off the scale, but a big part of the skill set that we help our participants learn is being mindful. Because so much of our behaviors, unfortunately some of them are negative coping behaviors, come out of just rushing through life, being overwhelmed, you know, turning to the quick fixes that we have. And if we can pause and be mindful in the present and really accept everything that's happening to us and acknowledge it and then make conscious choices that, you know, and we can support people and make positive coping techniques, mindfulness to me is one of the really important mechanisms we can use to help.
Yeah, that's interesting. Tanya, it's been great having you on the program. I'd like to give you a minute or so if you'd like to kind of close and recap and leave our audience with a few takeaways and how they can get in touch with you.
Okay, sure. Thank you so much. I think it's exciting times right now in our industry, and the time is right to embrace this broader view of health. And really, you know, at Health Fitness, we're all about creating healthy lifestyles. And we like to say we create healthy lifestyles by putting well-being into action, and we affectionately call that well-doing for more people. So we believe that by offering services to this broad view of health where it really resonates with others, we'll get higher engagement, not only in programs, but also in the company's workforce and being the best you can be. And finally, we'd love to have you check us out at healthfitness.com.
Yeah, thank you, Tanya, very much. Enjoy your weekend, and we really appreciate you spending time with us this morning. Great discussion.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Good, take care.
All right.
Bye.
Ron, good stuff.
Yeah, it really is. It's fascinating to see how, you know, again, consumerism is evolving. It's changing. It's morphing into various new dimensions that we hadn't seen before. I also think this is a good, I wanted to get in, there's so much we could have asked her and kept going even with her and maybe on a return visit. But, you know, it seems to me that there's a generational dimension to this as well. You know, as a baby boomer, you know, you're expected to come to the office prepared, do work and get recognized for it and move up the ladder based upon, you know, taking responsibility for your actions and your ability to come to work ready to be productive. I think the millennials have a broader view of life, and it's not just around work. It's around their whole lifestyle. And I think this whole idea of well-being kind of fits into that, where an employer is looking to help employees, not just, you know, when they walk in the door and then forget them when they walk out, but this broader dimension. I know my son would be a millennial. I mean, he works for a high-tech company in New York City, and they're planning events all around the clock. I mean, they'll go out and the company will rent a theater for them to watch the you know, first version of Star Wars or something. I mean, it's all sorts of activities that I think the millennials are looking for support from an employer. And the model that IEC has been following, that, you know, I do the workshops on, it's really the third generation that we're moving into more substantially, where your health affects your work and your work affects your health. Is that interaction going on? So it's pretty exciting to watch.
Back to community. Well, you know, you have a millennial sitting here too. What do you think about that, Jonathan? What he's talking about, well-being and millennials.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's important for our generation. You see a lot more people focusing on their job, their occupation, that's going to kind of meet all these various aspects of their life. That includes the physical, it includes a workplace where they have peers their own age. You know, they get along with people in their workplace. So I would definitely say that the priorities are changing, and
yeah,
that reflected in these programs.
You know, it's interesting, and I think they're changing, in, you know, for the right reasons too. You know, I think we may have had it wrong, Ron.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
well,
seriously.
Well,
you know,
each generation gets better. Each generation gets better. You know, I saw it at first really developing a few years ago. When I was doing consulting with Microsoft. Microsoft had great interest in helping people outside of work who they're in Seattle. It's a great outdoor environment, and people are out hiking and walking through the Olympic Mountains and down to the rainforest and up Mount Rainier and all that. And there's actually a safety issue if you're not doing things right in the outdoors, that can be in danger to you. And so they were actually providing education, support, and help for people outside the work, focused on safety as an issue. And I think that's also a part of well-being that we're seeing some help in. But that was sort of the first time I sort of got a flavor for that a number of years ago. And now, of course, as with the discussion today, it's gone beyond just safety issues into financial and social and all sorts of activities that can be looked at and help supported outside the workforce. So I'm glad we had a focus on it in Atlanta, and I think it'll be a big part of many of our conferences going forward at this point, because I think it's important.
Well, I think, you know, and when you look at, you know, the evolution of wellness to well-being, but then you look around that and, you know, you kind of go back to our van and move forward and bring the discussion forward. Looking back, it's that, you know, when you look at care management, when you look at telehealth, when you look at, you know, the evolution of on-site, near-site retail clinics. I mean, it's all tied together and enabling, mm-hmm. you know, consumers, employees, and their families to really take better care of themselves and feel better about the company they're working for that's helping them take better care of themselves. And, you know, yes, there's the the shared risk they now have with high deductible plans. But as all these programs come around us, what we're really doing is, you know, developing consumers that, you know, have better access, better knowledge to better care for themselves and their, and, you know, and their families. And then, you know, go through these programs like financial wellness or mindfulness and, you know, really have that, you know, better total well-being.
Yeah, I think I like the mindfulness stuff. Again, the baby boomers, as we age, we need to keep our mind busy and active. So you have all these, you know, games that you can play to just keep your mind active so you're not getting lethargic in your old age. You know, you're reading and keeping up with things and you're staying involved. And I think that's what people will find who come to the conference, that you can get involved and find out there's all these new ideas and new thoughts, and the technology is just exploding. You mentioned telehealth and telemedicine. That office of the doctor's office of the future is going to be in your living room. Well, how's that developing? And IHC gives that forum where that energy and that excitement about new things that are coming. But we try to stay close to reality and, you know, what's really available out there. What are some of the new ideas, but also what's practical for employers to begin to think about. I was really excited. I can't, as you can tell, I come away from the conferences excited about the new things that are going on and with great anticipation of the next conference, because I think that's where people will find the most, the networking, the new ideas, the energy that goes into the conferences. Your team puts a lot of effort into trying to get the right speakers and the right topics out there. And I'm not even sure that the agendas that people read on your internet, on the websites, really can communicate the excitement and energy that you'll get when you come to the conference. It's always hard to get that sort of headline that's sort of attention grabbing, but underneath it, when you show up to these conferences, you'll find that kind of information you're looking for. And we saw it when we asked this conference in Atlanta, how many people are returnees? They've been to a conference before. A great number of hands went up. And then we asked how many people are new. And we've got a large number of hands come up there as well. So the word is getting out, and people who have been here before are bringing in, connections and friends that they have so that they can also experience the value of these conferences you put on. It's very impressive.
Yeah, it's just
you guys did a great job.
You know, if you're an employer out there, you know, particularly in a mid-sized company, but also upstream a large company, and we have a lot of large jumbo employers, and, you know, and they're surrounded by very, you know, sharp advisors and consultants, but, you know, when they come to our event and, you know, walk away, they say, hey, this, you know, I got some good stuff out of this event. I think it's real positive. If you're a mid-sized company out there, you don't really have the luxury of a lot of high-priced, you know, consultants around you. And, you know, you can really benefit from these discussions and have clear takeaways. And, you know, because there's just so much disruption taking place in this space right now and so many different moving parts. I mean, if you look at our agenda from last week, and our workshops, I mean, look at the slice and dice of all the different subjects, and it all ties itself together around, you know, consumerism, but there's a lot to put your head around, you know, and understand. But when you immerse yourself for, you know, 2 days plus, you know, you really can start to understand how this all comes together and provides, you know, better cost-effective programs, because let's face it, you got to do that for your CFO and CEO, but also better programs that are going to take better care of your people, making them better productive and, you know, and improving performance, and are going to keep them, because we've got, you know, skilled workforce shortage in this country, and, you know, employers, you know, need to keep the bright people that they bring on board and have trained and educated.
You know, it's always interesting. You get the feedback in the comments. You get comments that, oh, there wasn't enough time to learn everything I wanted to learn about this topic. We need to have longer general sessions or longer workshops. And then you have other people say, oh, I there's so many topics I want to get into. I want to have more workshops, and I want to be able to go to more areas. So maybe you can shorten some so we can have more workshops to go into. So it's an interesting balance, but I think it all reflects the high quality of what you put together.
Yeah, and I think I want to remind our audience, too, that, you know, if you want to retain some of that discussion, particularly from the general sessions, our videos will be showcased up in IHC University, which is the the Learning Center for Healthcare Consumerism, and you can find that at theihcc.com, theihcc.com. And I know, Ron, you've done a lot of heavy lifting there to make sure that we're building that out and going to continue to build that out for the people
right.
to continue to learn between our events. It's not just about during our events. It's about how do you continue to learn after and, you know, in between time.
Yeah, that's a great new dimension. And we did highlight that in a number of times at this conference that we've really begun to build out IHC University. And people can find that by going to your regular website, theihcc.com. Go over on the top banner to university and then go down to the Learning Center underneath that. And, you know, there's a membership fee to get in there. But if you come to the conference and attend my pre-conference, for example, it's included. Year's membership is included there. We've got lots of videos that are free on your website. And we've got a lot more videos under the university that are good educational pieces, good updates. We've got a compliance corner that gives executive summaries of a lot of new regulations to come out. We've got a set of videos that's just for brokers on how to move from commissions to more of a consulting environment. There's just a whole host of things that are already there, and we'll continue to add to that and make it a very robust, exciting, educational location for people who are involved with the IHC to just continue after the conference. And then all the videos of prior conferences will be there as well. So it's a great thing that you're putting all that there for people who can't make it or people who have made it and want to go back and refresh themselves, because there's so much information. It's like, you know, drinking from the fire hose. You can't absorb it all the first time around. People will be able to go back and refresh on different parts of the conferences, the general sessions, some of the workshops to refresh themselves on what they heard the first time around so they can actually apply it in their workplace.
Yep, exactly right. Any other final thoughts on the event last week, Ron, that you might want to leave our audience with?
I think the excitement of people who want to come to one of the conferences, I think, and it includes so many different areas. You mentioned exchanges. We had a panel on exchanges. We'll have special events in Baltimore coming up and in Dallas next year that are have a lot more focus on exchanges, but exchange is such a critical part. That was part of the panel as well. The number of employers that we have coming to these is growing each time, and we probably had several hundred major employers around the East Coast. We had an awful lot from Atlanta by using the and connecting with the Atlanta wellness professionals. So we had companies like Delta Airlines and Chick-fil-A and Home Depot and Southern Company. It's just Newell Rubbermaid. It just goes on and on and on. And I think that kind of exposure to other employers at these conferences is something, whether you are a benefit manager who wants to learn from others what's worked, what hasn't worked, or whether you're a solution provider that's trying to, you know, get a better feel for the market. What are the employers looking for? I mean, they're the ultimate purchasers of all these services for their employees. So I think the workshops were very well attended. I think that there was a lot more even spreading. The topics were such that we had people in all of them. You know, occasionally we'll have a workshop where there's only a handful that people in there that are very interested in a particular topic. But I think this time almost all the workshops were very heavily attended. And I didn't notice many people moving from workshop to workshop. Sometimes a workshop kind of gets old the topic kind of gets a little stale, and so people move to another workshop to get more information. This time it seemed to me people were staying in the workshops. There was good interaction. It wasn't just listening to a presenter. It was sharing information, audience participation. I think that's the goal and the intent, and I think that the upcoming conference in Baltimore will be equally exciting. So those are some of my final thoughts on it. I thought it was a great workshop, great general sessions, overall good excitement and networking among the participants. I got a lot of personal feedback that was very positive of the exhibitors. A lot of people were stopping by. So they make it possible, obviously. The exhibitors are the ones that allow the show really to go on and for you to make a very generous offer to benefit managers out there for relatively low cost compared to most conferences. So that model, that business model, seems to be working very well.
And I think, you know, we'll be talking about this in the next couple of weeks, too. I'll be adding some further thoughts as we get more of the evaluations in from attendees. And if you're out there and we're one of our attendees, you know, we want to hear from you, too, because it's not about what we all think. It's about what you got out of this event and what you'd like to see at our events going forward, either for our second half events and also evolving into 2017, you know, event plan for here in May and elsewhere. And we appreciate all of our sponsors that may be listening today for your participation, because to Ron's point, not only do you showcase key innovation, but you provide that learning environment, but you make it possible for employers to get to our event basically low cost or no cost, and because we're all very conscious about helping them come to learn, but do so on a very cost-effective budget. And, you know, we were well over 800 people at the event last week, so we're very pleased with where we were. And, again, it's about you. It's about you, the sponsor, you, the speakers, you, the attendees, that and about your takeaways. So, you know, we want to hear from you through these evaluation forms and other feedback. But, you know, we're on to Baltimore, Private Exchange Forum Baltimore. Again, as we talked earlier, you can sign up now for $99. Sponsor opportunities exist, speaking opportunities exist, and you know, sign up to attend and be in that discussion. You know, whether you are doing it and want to do it better, whether you're considering it, or whether you don't know whether you should consider it, it's a place to be to really kind of understand, you know, where it can fit into your benefit plan or your client's benefit plan. If you're a broker out there, an advisor out there, you know, how do you use these tools better? You know, maybe you're looking at a more mature benefit marketplace from the one that you have. Maybe you haven't done it yet. You know, this is definitely a place to be. And if you're a health plan and you have an exchange or you're looking to evolve your exchange, this is where you should be to be in that discussion, TPAs as well. So, again, Private Exchange Forum Baltimore, September 8th through 9th, Super Saver Rate. Go to www.theiaccforum.com, where you'll also see information on IHC Forum West that we'll talk about, you know, more next week. So, Ron and Jonathan, yeah, great program today. Appreciate you guys being here. To our audience out there, thank you for joining us this week on Healthcare Consumers Radio, and we'll see you next week at 11 o'clock.
Bye.